couldn't make it work. It was, couldn't make it work. That's the truth. We couldn't make it work, but that doesn't mean we couldn't make it work.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I'm the lead fantasy analyst over at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are back with another pod. Almost didn't get today's pod. Those of you who saw on Twitter, I was 3 minutes into this podcast and then a massive, massive storm hit and we lost power. And then the electricity company was saying it's going to be 4 or 5 hours before it's back on. Next minute. And by next minute, I mean 5 minutes later, it was back. So we're ready to go. The pod has been quickly upgraded from doubtful to available to return. We will see how long that lasts, whether I tweak anything, whether the electricity company tweaks anything while it's still going. But fingers crossed we get this show done. But you know what? Even if we don't, you'll never know the difference because this pod won't get released. So I don't know why I'm telling you all this. Regardless, if you are watching this on YouTube, you can see that my camera has not arrived. I have ordered a new one that should be here for tomorrow's show. So you have to put up with my fat red head for today. Unfortunately, not at its pristine HD quality. Let's stop talking about bullshit things that don't matter and let's get into the action from the NBA for Monday.
Let's get to it.
There were 10 games on Monday. We're going to break all of those down. Then we're going to head into the DFS portion of the show. And it's a pretty shitty slate, to be honest. But we're still going to do it. The Tuesday 3-game slate for DFS. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. And it goes to Jim Butler. Jimmy was struggling with a back issue. We saw him hurt that in the Timberwolves last game. He was questionable leading up to this one, but he was ready to go. And not only was he ready to go, he was ready to dominate. 37-6-4 for Jim. 3 steals and 2 triples. 12 from 21 from the field and 11 of 12 from the line. Remember how panicked we were about Jim Butler to begin the season? Well, not necessarily we, but I guess the fantasy community in general. It is a great lesson to not overreact early on to your first couple of round picks, especially if they have changed teams or if things have changed on their team and get things to be figured out. And there's always exceptions to that. And people who do change teams maybe never figure it out. But with Butler, we heard he's aggressive. He was basically in kids, close your ears, I'm about to swear, but he was basically like, fuck this shit. I'm taking over this crap and I'm dealing with it. And that's exactly what he did. And people can say that, but he actually did it and he was animalistic about it. He started taking shots. He started handling the ball more. And that's exactly what we wanted to see from Jim when we did draft him in the second round. Over the last month, he's the 12th ranked player, averaging 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1.5 threes. And he's shooting 50, 84, and 37. Numbers which probably won't sustain. He was at 46% each of the last 2 seasons from the field, so that 50% is probably just a little bit too high and expect that to regress. But he looks like he's going to be a comfortable top 20 type of player and really starting to get it all together. We still could get a few more shots out of Jim, but it's not like he's taking huge chunks less than last season. He averaged 16.5 field goal attempts per game last year. He's at 15.6 this year. And over the last month, he's actually higher than his figure from last season, which was 17.6. The difference in Butler this season is his free throw rate. He was at 8.9 attempts per game last year. He is at just 5.3 this season. And it's been a slight increase over the last month at 5.5, but still not anywhere near those other numbers. If he got those back to last season's volume, the percentage is still there, unlike Russell Westbrook, the percentage is still there, then he would be pushing to be a top 15 sort of player. So Butler has taken things over in Minnesota, as he should. He is comfortably the best player there. None of this Wiggins bullshit, although that still does occur. But Butler's handling the ball. He's doing more of what we love from him, and he's been really, really strong lately. So if you weathered the storm, if you bought low, which you could have done, congratulations to you, because he is the monstrous line of the night for Monday's action. This one gives me a decent amount of, I don't know if pride's the right word, but the waiver wire line of the night goes to Joshy Richardson of the Miami Heat, 26-4-3, with 2 triples, 3 steals, and 2 blocks. He almost had the Richie Beno, he almost had the Gooch as well, didn't quite get there for either of those. So big, big night from Joshy, 10 of 19 from the field and 4 of 5 from the line. So the big caveat I'll throw out here is the Heat were missing Goran Dragic, they were missing Justice Winslow, they were missing Jimmy Johnson, and they were missing Hassan Whiteside, 4 significant contributors. But we don't own Josh Richardson because we want him to score 26 points a night. No, of course we don't. We want him to get some assists, to get some steals, to be an unbelievable shot-blocking guard. And that's what he's he provided to us once again here. Unbelievably, for a guy that many people dropped to the waiver wire, in the last week, he is the 12th ranked player. In the last 2 weeks, he is the 27th ranked player, and he is still owned in only 41% of leagues. If he is on your waiver wire, make sure you go and grab him. I don't think that he's going to remain the 27th ranked player, but he should comfortably be a top 100 guy from here on out and has top 60, top 65 potential. The reason I say he won't be the 27th ranked guy is because in those seven games, he's shooting 54% from the field and 55% from three. Now, this is a guy that's gone through massive, massive stretches of hot shooting. His rookie season, 46% from three. Last season, 33%, but I think post All-Star, he was at like 42% from three. So he goes on these hot streaks. The problem is he started the season with one of the more epic cold streaks that we've seen in a while. I think that he's still got room to go up on his season averages of 44 from the field and 35 from three. I think both of those numbers do have the ability to increase as the season goes on. We know what he's like as a shot blocker. Over the last seven games, he's averaging 2.6 triples, 1.3 blocks, and 1.3 steals and 1.1 blocks, you know, closing in on the triple 1.5 in that time frame. He was a triple 1.5 guy last season in April, I believe, maybe even in March, putting up some big numbers. The thing is, one of the reasons why I didn't panic on Richardson, and if you go back and listen to these my past podcasts, you'll probably hear me say, I understand the frustration with Josh Richardson. I understand you wanting to drop him, and I probably couldn't blame you if you did, but I am very patient with him, and I will hold. And I'm pretty sure I said that nearly every episode we talked about him. And the reason is he was still playing elite-level defense. He was still getting the minutes on a consistent basis, and he was shooting at a ridiculously low percentage and had such a stupid low usage that all those things seemed to me as if they were going to revert. And revert they have. It hasn't just been one game. It hasn't been 2 weeks games. He's a top 70 player over the last month as well, averaging 13.5, 3.5, with almost that triple one there as well, shooting 50 and 83 for a guy who struggled so, so much. He is killing it at the moment. Let's go on to the next game. It is the young gun of the night, and it is formally the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince is your young gun of the night, 24-7-3 with 4 triples, 3 blocks, 7 of 12 from the field and 6 of 6 from the free throw line. Amazingly, he is still not owned in every league, and he is the 31st ranked player over the last 2 weeks and is 77th on the season. His minutes aren't going anywhere. There'll be the occasional Budenholzer, dummy spit where he plays him 22 minutes and then he'll bounce back. He has been great this year without being spectacular. 13-5-2.5, 2 threes, 1.1 steals and 0.6 blocks. Pretty much the perfect roto line, which makes him an awesome, awesome roto guy. Probably even have him as a higher rank. Yeah, maybe even a top 60, top 50 roto guy, given how that those numbers look. 45 from the field, 77 from the line, still shooting a ridiculous 43% from three, which I, at some point I do imagine is going to come down. But the minutes will be fine. The shots will be there. The steals will be okay if he can get those back up. He's been a little bit quiet on those lately, but he can get them up and some decent block numbers. He does have triple one potential as well. And like Richo, if Prince is available, he is a guy that you absolutely have to make sure you own. Nothing is changing with his value in a negative sense. He's not losing his job. He's not losing his minutes. He's playing 30 a night. He might end up with 35 a night down the stretch here, and everything will improve. So he is a strong, strong second half guy who's already a top 80 player. You can't really argue too much with formerly. The dud of the night, Miles Turner, was putrid. 2 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 steals. Probably the most troubling stat here is he only took 3 shots. He missed all of them, and he was 2 of 6 from the line. So I think it's fair to say, and I don't think this is stretching it too much, that the calf injury that had him listed as questionable before the game bothered him. Easy enough. This is what it is. Now, that could linger. We know that calf strains aren't the easiest thing to heal a lot of the time. But, you know, what do you do? If someone's pissed, and people get irrationally pissed at certain things. Oh, Miles Turner, useless, what is it? Throw a buy low at him. Throw anyone. Throw the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, who had a big game today. Throw him and get Miles Turner. See how you got. You literally never know. The bullshit that I see come my way in terms of trades that are offered or trades that are accepted, it's amazing. Leverage the current. And that's not a great phrase. We're not really going to print that on t-shirts, but leverage what's happening at the moment. Stinker, big game, bang, make the switch. Have a long-term thought rather than what happened in the last game. And that's what I'd be looking at with Miles. Someone did throw that at me, should I be buying low on Miles? Absolutely you should. This was a calf-related issue. He has struggled. Well, he hasn't struggled. He's been okay. 14-7 with 2.3 blocks. But he hasn't taken on as big of a chunk of the offense as what we thought. Now, the prevailing thought about Miles Turnheaton to this season, who else have they got? He's going to be taking, you know, usage 30%. And I was never quite that high on him. But I didn't expect Victor Oladipo to be as insane as what he is. I thought Turner would still be getting up more shots and being able to be maybe a 17 and 18 point per game guy. And he's clearly not at that level at the moment, just not as aggressive offensively. But the blocks are there, the decent free throw percentage is there. He's hitting some threes. He could still stand to hit a few more of those. But there is still upside to get better from where he is. And he's currently a top 50 guy. So it's not too bad of an issue. I forgot to play this, but hey. I tell a man's not hot. He wasn't, but he can be better than this. So definitely go and see if you can acquire Miles Turner as a buy low player. You just never know your luck. All right, now let's get stuck into talking about these games. There were 10 of them for Monday, so lots of action for us to break down. And then we'll get into DFS after that. Let's start looking at all 10 of these games that were played on Monday. I said lots of action for us to discuss, so we'll get stuck into that now. The first one of those games was the Boston Celtics and the Indiana Pacers. Pacers fans, you would be absolutely ropeable. Do I have any Pacers fans that listen to this podcast? I can't really think. I know I've got plenty of Celtics fans. I'm not sure if I have any Pacers fans that listen to this show, so hopefully you guys aren't too despondent over this, over whatever this was that went down with your team. If you haven't seen it, go check out the last, I don't know, 10 seconds of the game when they're trying to do this inbound pass and Terry Rozier picks it off midcourt, goes down for the dunk and puts the Celtics 1 point up with about a second left, which is obviously an absolutely horrific way to lose a game, which is the way the things went for the Indiana Pacers. But let's talk fantasy value from this. Al Horford, another brilliant game, 14, 10, and 9, a steal, a block. He has been a brilliant, brilliant steal if you were able to get him late in drafts around pick 50. People thinking Gordon Hayward is really going to have a massive impact on him, and you were able to get him pretty late. So he's been awesome. And Jason Tatum continues to be just outstanding. Continues to make me look like an idiot when I keep saying his three-point percentage is going to fall. He hit his only three here. It's only going up at the moment, which is just crazy. He's continuing to shoot over 50% from the field, which is bananas. I did say the other day, if he ends the season with a 50% three-point percentage, I will shave my beard live on a podcast. How can anyone have the greatest three-point shooting season of all time as a rookie for a guy that wasn't a great three-point shooter in college? It's happening, and I don't understand how it is actually happening, but it is. Marcus Smart, speaking of the greatest shooters of all time, Marcus Smart went 4-for-4 from 3 for 15 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. I still believe that he should be owned in leagues, but it really does depend on how your team looks. Kyrie, 30 points with 5 triples, while Rozier had those 2 steals, but not much else. And Jaylen Brown was shitful. 13-3, horrendous at the free throw line yet again. And honestly, it is getting tougher and tougher to label him a must-own for, say, 10-team leagues. In a 12, I don't think you'd want to drop him. But given his negative impact on your free throws and his just up-and-downness all the time, he is really a tough guy to hold on to. Bainesy was okay, 2 points in 22 minutes for him. I don't even know why I really bother mentioning him, to be honest. On to the Indiana Pacers. Victor Oladipo, just the casual 38 points, 5 triples, no, 5 rebounds, 2 triples, 3 steals, and a block. Insane efficiency. He is out of control this season. Really just continues to put up numbers that, you know, I liked him. I thought Victor Oladipo was going to be an awesome option. I thought he was going to be a great option last season. Yeah, potential top 20 guy. I thought he was going to have a huge bounce back this year. Didn't think he'd be the 9th best player, which is what he currently is. Just killing it. 5th best over the last month. Shooting at insane levels. Got his steals and blocks back, which inexplicably took a tumble last season. Just brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant stuff from Victor Oladipo. Daz Collison, 15-2-2. And yesterday I was talking about the nicknames that I give to these guys. Aussie nicknames, like Dazza. And I said that there's a rule, but I'm not sure what the rule is. And a few people mentioned it to me. And if there's double R's in names, you give it the Azza. So Darren becomes Dazza. Larry becomes Lazza. I suppose Aaron doesn't really count because there's only one R, but if you've got an R in the middle, you can put the ZZAs there. So Azza. Terry becomes Tezza. Jeremy becomes Jezza because it's Jeremy down to Jerry down to Jezza. any name that's sort of got an R in the middle can have that Ezra put onto it. So that's the general rule if you are looking for it. Corey can go to Koza even. That's another way you can go with one. Haven't dropped that up. Koz Joseph. You can drop that one in as well. So Daz Collison only played 24 minutes, but 15-2-2 with two steals is pretty strong. While Corey Joseph, Koza, he played 28 minutes and had 4-3-3. He is one of those least with the most guys. Give him minutes and absolutely nothing comes of it. Domantas Sabonis with Turner struggling, he played 29 minutes and had 18-7. Now, with Turner dealing with this calf issue that really did limit him in this game, I'd grab Sabonis if he was dropped. He was hard to own when he was playing 19, 20 minutes a night, but if there's the potential for a week or two of 30 minutes a night, you have to go and grab him. Boyan had 10 points with two triples in 29 minutes. That's cool and all, but yeah, he is a streaming option at best. The New York Knicks and the Charlotte Hornets, the Knicks got their pants pulled down. There was no Kristaps
Porzingis.
He was out, so Mick Beasley got another start. 31 minutes for Bees, 23-9 with two triples and two blocks. While Kristaps is out, Beasley is the guy that you want to own. And Porzingis still says he's feeling like a pinch or a tweak in his knee, so maybe another couple of games could be on the sidelines for big Kristaps. Enes Kanter, 11 points with 3 rebounds, far from his best night. While Frankie Ntilikina, I don't know what Hornacek's thinking, just limiting him for whatever bullshit reason he's got out there. Yeah, he'd been playing strong, finishing games, 27 minutes, and I go, all right, it's going, it's happening. And then he goes 13 minutes with foul trouble last game, 23 in a blowout loss. It's just putrid coaching. Now, I haven't got verification on this, but Mark Berman, Berman of the Post, you may know him as, tweeted today that the Knicks didn't practice after the Thunder game so they could savor the win against Carmelo Anthony. Now, if that is actually true, that is just as putrid coaching as I've seen. Now, you know what, boys? We beat Melo. Take the day off. What's this bullshit? What? Should we have all played the Knicks guys in DFS for a revenge game against a former teammate? That cannot be true. And if it's true, if it wasn't the Knicks, Hornacek shouldn't have a job after that. That is one of the more ludicrous things I'd heard. Now, I don't know if Berman was taking the piss, but if he wasn't, that is something else. Courtney Lee was shithouse. He had the piss-poor version of a Richie Beno. 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists. Make sure he is owned, though. Don't be too concerned about that performance. On to the Hornets. Big Frank the Tank Kaminsky went bananas. 24-5 with 4 triples and 2 blocks on 77% shooting. I don't think we need to get overly worked up about Frank. He is playing better than Marvin Williams at the moment, who only saw 19 minutes of action. He got some extra playing time there, but we know he's up and down, and he's not going to be a must-own guy for 12-team leagues. 31 minutes for Batum, 9-4-4 with a pair of steals and blocks. So good numbers there from him, while Jez Lamb played 30 minutes because we had somewhat of a blowout, so he got some extra playing time in this one. 9-8-4, still not a must-own 12-team league guy. Kemba only played the 30 minutes, while Malik Monk continues to be not ideal. He had 4 points, didn't miss a shot, but only 3 minutes in a blowout is not a great sign from Malik Monk. Dwighty Howard had a double-double, but didn't do a huge amount. In fact, he shot 30% from the field and 83% from the line. So honestly, if someone said to me Dwight's percentages were 30 and 83, I would expect the other way around, and he went 83 from the field and 30 from the line. I think that's a more realistic expectation than what he pulled out today. While Michael Kidd-Gilchrist had a nice double-double. Now, his rebounds have been significantly negatively impacted by Dwight Howard so far this season. Not so much in this game. He is putting up some okay performances at the moment, but I don't think that he is a must-own player. His numbers, they're okay. They're solid-ish. But still, over the last 2 weeks, he's the 158th ranked player. It's not enough for 12s. I wouldn't own him. I think he's more of a 14-team league guy, really, at best. And for some reason, can't hit a free throw at all this year, for whatever reason that may be. Let's go on to the next game, the Miami Heat and the Atlanta Hawks. I talked about the Heat already having so many players out. Tyler Johnson started in place of the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic. He had 40 minutes, 19-3-2 with 2 steals for Johnson. Amazingly, he is a top 60 player over the last 2 weeks, but he has been inconsistent. And for a bloke who's probably only going to get 25 minutes a night, I don't think that he is a must-own guy in standard leagues. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, wasn't at his most accurate, just 1-3 for 6 points in 33 minutes, but the minutes were there clearly, while Bam Adebayo and Jordan Mickey both pulled in 10 rebounds and were solid in their 30 minutes for Bam and 24 for Mickey. And as long as Jim Johnson and Whiteside and Winslow remain out, they can have streaming value. Dion Waiters had 23 in his 36 minutes after he recovered from the flu. On to the Hawks. Kent Bazemore, just brilliant in the defensive numbers. 16, 5, and 7. 5 steals and 2 blocks for Bazemore. I was a little bit down on him heading into this season, but he is clearly a must-own guy. He's still up and down in terms of what he can do, but this was nice. Mike Budenholzer, the rotations from the Hawks have been quietly one of the more frustrating all season. And again, just a weird one. Malcolm Delaney goes from not playing at all to playing 25 minutes, while Luke Babbitt plays 5, Isaiah Taylor plays 9, and Bellinelli plays 7. When, yeah, a week or two ago, all 3 of those guys could have easily been playing 20 minutes. So it was a weird one there. Johnny Collins, the Baptist, only 18 minutes. They said, and this is a confusing thing, we're going to put him on a minutes restriction, but honestly, he's going to be at the same level of minutes that he would normally get. Now, no offense to you, Mike, but 18 minutes is not the normal level of minutes that the Baptist gets. He's averaging 24 minutes per game on the season. So 18 is nowhere near that. And the fact that you're not going to, he cannot possibly be thinking that he is only going to play 18 minutes. He had 9 and 6. He's still a must-own guy. He's a top 100 player in only 23 minutes a night. The fact that, you know, that he said that is just another one of those confusing coach speak bullshit things. So I wouldn't be too worried. We did get 32 minutes out of Ersan Ilyasova, who had 13, 3, and 2 and didn't shoot the ball all that well. He's a fine streamer, but he's not a must-own guy that I believe you have to have on your roster. Schroeder had 23, 6, and 6. Strong game from him. The next game, the Utah Jazz and the Houston Rockets. Rocket Rodney Hood, 26 points in 31 minutes, 5 triples with 4 assists and 2 steals. He is just going to take as many shots as he wants on that second unit, and hopefully they go in. He should be owned in all 12-team leagues and majority of 10-team leagues. He does have a somewhat of a cap on his upside given the minutes and potentially his inefficiency, but he's been really, really good when he hasn't been injured this year. Joe Johnson, I think, is going to remain starting as long as Rudy Gobert is out. 29 minutes for Joe, 12, 3, and 2, and he is a decent, deeper league type add, while Derek Favors sat this one out again with concussion. So Epe Udo started. He had 3 and 5 in 27 minutes with a steal and a block. Yeah, as long as Favors is out, Udo could have some value, but he's not going to be a must-own, drop-everything-to-grab sort of guy. Don Mitchell wasn't his best night. He had some foul trouble, only 21 minutes, 6-2-1 with 4 steals. I wouldn't be overly concerned about that. And with him struggling, Ravishing Rick Rubio played 36 minutes. I think you're more likely to have the minutes reversed in the next game and the Don to play 36 and Rubio to play 21 than for this minutes distribution to continue. As for Ravishing, he had 14, 3, and 4 with 2 steals. So that's a pretty strong performance from Rubio. But yeah, I don't imagine that he goes back and plays 36 in the next one. Alec Burks, if you're still holding on to him in 12-team leagues, don't. It's done. 16 minutes, 8 points, 4 rebounds. It was always going to be tough. This is something that I did preach with him. He's just not going to be able to get enough playing time to be a 12-team league guy, and that is how it's panned out. Onto the Rockets, Jimmy Harden, 26, 6, and 6. 3 steals with 4 triples was brilliant. But I'll tell you who was better. My boy Clint Capela, 24 and 20 for Clint. 3 assists and 2 blocks. And something, again, and I know that the coaches bullshit from time to time because they have to. They might think they have to. Maybe they don't have to as much as they do. But Mike D'Antoni the other day, oh, we need more out of Clint. We need him to give us more minutes. He just can't handle it from a physical point of view. You know, 2 days later, 35 minutes. So, and I criticized Mike at the time. I said, Mike, well, you need him to give you more minutes. You're in control of it. I said, well, maybe not. Maybe if he can't run it out. But he can because he played 35 minutes here. It's just that you're not giving it to him. 24 and 20 with 2 blocks. He has been an absolute stud so far this season. And I reckon if he was in the Eastern Conference, you'd have to give him all-star consideration at least. Eric Gordon knocked in 7 triples for 33 points and did just a whole bunch of FA apart from that. 1 assist, 1 block, no rebounds. How do you go through a game with no rebounds? Eric Gordon will tell you. Well, Chris Paul struggled and then he just blew up in the fourth quarter. 18, 9 and 10 for Paul. I think he had 8 assists in the fourth. 2 blocks and a steal continues to be awesome. Well, Trev Ariza, a lot of minutes with Marmute out, 15 and 6 for him. And also, just a quick PSA, if you're holding on to Ryan Anderson in 12-team leagues, don't. If you're owning Ryan Anderson in 14-team leagues, don't. He played 19 minutes and went scoreless. He was never a guy that should have been drafted in any standard league, in my opinion. And now he volunteered, apparently, at halftime and said, Coach, get PJ Tucker in there ahead of me because I'm an absolute disaster on defense. He didn't say that, but he said get PJ Tucker in there, and Tucker played 34 minutes. It's about 3 games in a row where Anderson's been significantly limited. And even in the games where he plays big minutes, he's significantly limited. So he is not a 12, he is not a 14-team league guy. Of that, I am decently confident. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Chicago Bulls. We'll talk about the Sixers side of things first. The Bulls get the victory. They're 6th in a row, of course they do. There was no Joel Embiid, so Amir Johnson started. He had 4-2-2 in 14 minutes, but Rashawn Holmes started the second half and had 14-7-3 in 23 minutes, and that's good. Now, the Sixers do play again Tuesday with Embiid coming back, but Trevor Booker will be out, so I would make sure that Holmes is owned for that. But after that, you're going to have Booker, Johnson, and Holmes trying to play whatever scraps are left behind Embiid and Šarić, and it's just, in my opinion, not going to be enough for Holmes to be owned. Great for Tuesday, great for nights when Embiid is out, but otherwise we're talking 14, 15 minutes, max 20 minutes. But I just don't think it's enough. TJ McConnell played 31, he had 11, 6 and 5, probably his best game since coming back from that shoulder issue, while Benny Simmons struggled from the line, 1 of 5, but 19, 11 and 9 with 4 blocks and 50% from the field is a bloody good line. And he has been good all season, while Bob Cove, he didn't take many shots, to be honest, only 5 shots for 10 points, but 7 boards, 4 steals and a block, and that's why his fantasy value is so high, while Šarić had 27 and 8 with 2 steals. Now, on to the Chicago Bulls. I'm going to play this, but only because I haven't heard it for a while, and I don't know if I'm going to hear it much in the future.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
Because Chicago is fun, and they are rolling, and I'm going to offer a degree of an apology to Fred Hoiberg. Now, I did tweet this out today, like, who do you think is the worst coach in the NBA? Shout out to Jason Kidd, who garnered the most responses. But who is the worst coach in the NBA? Amazingly, I had one person say Eric Spoelstra, one person say Terry Stotts, which I absolutely could not believe at all. All the other responses, fair enough. Hoiberg made some disastrous decisions. The point guard carousel was ridiculous. The treatment of the use of Nikola Mirotic was horrendous. The fact that the use of Mirotic in the offense was horrendous. But he was also kneecapped by Garpax. Signing Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo to this team just killed any semblance of good basketball, of fun basketball, of anything that Hoiberg would want to do. And I stated this many times last season, the Bulls' best two-man combination by a significant way was Jim and Nick Mirotic. And they needed to see the court together more. They needed to play together more. And Nick needs to be more of an offensive focus. But Hoiberg couldn't do that. Now, there's a couple of things you can say, oh yeah, Hoiberg was given the wrong thing and Butler and Wade were being ship blokes, which apparently they were, and all that sort of stuff. So some of that's on Hoiberg because he's the coach. Get some balls and run things in a way that actually suits what you've got. But when you're given those bullshit pieces that don't make any sense on a roster, I guess it is hard. Now he can run things through the Montenegrin Alpha and hope that he can continue what he's doing, because Mirotic has been really good. And you know that I've been saying that Mirotic is good for a long time, and I get pushback on that all the bloody time. Man, worst defender in the league. No, he's not. Actually a decent defender. Terrible offensive player. No, actually pretty good. He's not this good. I don't think he's this good, but he put up 22 and 13 today on 43% shooting. So it's not like he just went ridiculously hot. He was just that good. Now, Lauri Markkanen returned, and he went straight back into the starting role and played 26 minutes, and Mirotic played 26 as well. But this is something I did posit a few days ago, maybe a week ago, is that I think they're going to run Mirotic and Markkanen together and limit Lopez. And Lopez played 22 minutes only. And they went with a lot of Bob Portis, they went with a lot of Mirotic, and they went with a lot of Markkanen, and closed the game with Mirotic and Markkanen. Now, I didn't know this was going to be the case. I'm not sure if this would have been the case at all had Markkanen not got injured as soon as Mirotic came back. So the timing was horrendous for Mirotic to lose his starting job, but it was also extremely fortuitous to have Markkanen injured just when he comes back, for him to go into that starting job and just to light shit on fire, which is basically what he's done. Add him if he is around anywhere, go and do it. But for as well as he played today, which was brilliant, and he is the best player on this team, in my opinion, he only played 26 minutes. And that's, I guess, the level of concern there. Will he continue to have a usage of 33%? Probably seems a little bit high. But give him 26 minutes a night, he can be a top 100 guy. Give him 30 minutes a night, he's a top 50 guy. If he gets 22, that's the concern. But if they limit Lopez, they've already pissed Felizio off. If they just run a punch Bob, Mirotic, Markkanen with a bit of Lopez in their four-man front court, there might be enough there for Mirotic. And I didn't think this would be the case. Now, when all this shit went down with punch Bob and the Bulls organization and teammates and team members all sided with punch Bob, I went, well, this is not happening. Mirotic is just not going to come back to this team. He doesn't want to come back. He says, I'm not coming back. I want to be traded. I'm never playing for this team again. This is all the stuff that was coming out. Next minute, he's here and he's dominating and the Bulls are on a huge run. So it definitely has swung 180 degrees. Denzel the Hammer Valentine is terrible at the moment. 10 points in 22 minutes with 3 assists. I think there's no reason to consider him a 10 or 12 or 14 team league guy, but I'm not necessarily adding David Nwaba, who had 10 points in 26 minutes. And Nwaba does some good stuff defensively, but he is more of a deeper league fantasy guy. Also, Chrissy Dunn looks not horrible. He looks good a lot of the time. He has some moments where you go, what is going on? But he has improved significantly this season. He still has some offensive issues. Turnovers are a real problem with him, but you know, I don't care about that for fantasy. But 22, 4, and 6 with 2 steals, and his efficiency is through the roof. He's shooting 41% from 3 over the last month. Also, really putting up some good numbers, and of course, he is a clear, clear must-own. While Justin Holiday hit 5 triples in his 20 points, 2 blocks and 3 assists for Juz. Not sure what's going to happen to him when Zaki returns next month. Yeah, he's been up and down. He cooled off quite a bit lately, but has pushed back and some good numbers there. While Punchbob Shiploke had 12 and 10 with a triple one. I don't think that Punchbob is a 12 team guy. He, for sure, on a low volume night, is a brilliant, brilliant stream. But I don't think that he is a must own 12 team league player. Let's go on to the Portland Trailblazers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Yusuf Nurkic still on somewhat of a minutes limit. 20 and 7 with 3 blocks. I'll take it. Only 28 minutes, a big night from him. The Blazers made another change to their rotation today with Pat Connaughton going down to 5 minutes and Evan Turner playing 37. 5-2 and 6 for Turner with 2 steals. He is a good assists streamer and it looks like he's going to have for the foreseeable future this starting small forward job, but that doesn't mean he's a 12-team league guy. Mo Harkless had his second consecutive DMPCD while Noah Vonleh copped his first DMPCD as Zach Collins looks to have taken that backup power forward role in the rotation ahead of both Leonard and Vonleh, and he's solid. He's not going to really have any impact in redraft leagues this year, maybe 20-teamers, but he is a very, very solid option. So, you know, drop your Harklesses, drop your Connaughtons, drop your Vonlehs in most settings. Dame had 17, 8, and 13, while McCollum had 22 and 4 with 2 steals on some pretty efficient shooting. Didn't get to the line at all. In fact, the Blazers only had 5 free throw attempts for the entire game, and they were not happy about it. On to the Wolves. Jamal Crawford, this is one of those nights that he just has occasionally. 23 points on 16 shots. Figuratively nothing else. 1 rebound, 2 assists and a steal. 63% shooting. Don't get worked up about that. Don't get excited. It's not going to be something that sticks. Townsend played 41 and had 16, 8 and 4 with 3 triples. While Bielitsa was out again, massive, massive shock. While Taj Gibson had 10 and 4 in his 34, and Gorgui had 0 and 2. Gorgui Dieng, not a 12-team league guy, and is not until further notice. Marcus Georges-Hunt returned or remained in the rotation. He put up a 7 trillion. You just can tell that Tibbs is just itching to really cut it back and give those 7 out to Jim and to Wigo, who was shitful. 9 points, 6 rebounds in 33 minutes for Wigo. He had a steal and a block, so I guess you can count that as a bonus, but just horrendous percentages. This bloke is just not good. He is just not a good fantasy producer at all. Now, I do get the questions, and on the surface, they sound stupid. Should I drop Andrew Wiggins? But they're not stupid. He's the 161st ranked player this season. He's 297th over the last 2 weeks. He's 178th last season. Now, most of his value the last 2 years had come from the fact that he'd been a 20-point-per-game scorer. He's scoring 18 this year. His efficiency has gone down from 54% true shooting to 50%. He's hitting threes at under 30%. He's doing absolutely nothing in the other categories. You're in a 10-team league. I reckon he might be done. I reckon you might have to say bye-bye, Wigo. In a 12-team league, I guess it would depend on who you're adding. But I think the majority of you that own Andrew Wiggins in fantasy, if you have an honest look at your roster, is he your worst player? Because for a number of you, if you're sitting second or third or top three in your standings and you've got Wiggins on your roster, I can almost guarantee you he will be your worst player. Now, can he get better? Sure. His shooting can improve. He'll shoot over 30% from three. He'll be better than the 41% from the field he's been in the last month. That'll improve. I've got pretty good confidence in that. But everything else, I'm done. It's not improving. Fourth year in the NBA, I just don't think he's ever going to get rebounds, get assists, get steals, get blocks. I just don't think they're going to happen. And that's going to forever limit him as a fantasy player. Really had some decent upside. Forget it now. I'm out on Andrew Wiggins. The Denver Nuggets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Dr. Michael Malone decided once again to bring Nikola Jokic off the bench, played him just 25 minutes. He had 13-9 with two steals. Still, you know, Malone really getting into the psyche of him. He's not ready. He's not ready for it. He just can't get out there and do it. You know, just got to take it one game at a time. So, of course, the Nuggets were smashed to begin the game, and then Jokic tried to bring them back into it, which he did. Let's see whether Nick remains on the bench for the next game. Knowing Malone, he probably will. They also ran Fartin Will Barton off the bench, which is fair enough, because he was just disgusting in this game. 6 points on 15 shots with 7 assists. He can do this at times, but he was just ball hogging at its finest for a guy that was just absolutely putrid, going 0 of 8 from 3. He just dominated the ball in a way that he just should never have done. And that's part of the reason why I don't like him as a player. I just feel like he's not a good fit guy, not a good flow guy. But he still has a guy that you want to own, but this was putrid. Torrey Craig. Shout out to the NBL. Torrey Craig was the Defensive Player of the Year down here in Australia last season. I think he was also the most improved player. He started his second game, played 30 minutes, and had 14-2-1 with a steal, a block, and 3-3. So, of course, I get the questions, add Torrey Craig? And the answer to that is probably not. Because I tell you what, he's not hitting 100% of his shots, which he did in this game. He's also a two-way guy, so he's got 45 days which to play, which equals maybe 15, 17 games, maybe. And then to remain on the roster, the Nuggets would have to either execute a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-2 trade, or they'd have to waive someone in order to get that. Now, maybe they could waive Dick Jefferson to free up a roster spot. Maybe that's the case. But short-term, maybe for a month, you can use Torrey Craig, and you can get something out of him. But you won't get this out of him. You'll get defensive stats. I've got no doubt about that. You'll get blocks. You'll get steals. That's fine. You won't get this sort of offense. Just don't count that. You just consider him an Andre Robertson with a defined shelf life. And that might be fine, but it's not going to be for everyone. Ken Faried, this is how shit he is. Out of the rotation with no Paul Millsap. Trey Lyles, 15-9 in 25 minutes. I think Lyles is going to retain this value for as long as Millsap is out. Although, again, once the doctor is in, gets his prescription pad out and writes it up, I think we might see Jokic back in the starting lineup, and I reckon we might see Faried come back in, because for whatever logic Malone has, it's limited, but that would be his move. But he had the opportunity to play him together with Jokic off the bench in this one and didn't, so that's a concern. Now, the other concern is, in this game, no Emmanuel Mudiay, so the Blue Arrow played 25 minutes. Now, Jamal Murray has been killing it. His dicking around with Murray is absolutely infuriating, and Michael Malone came up as a number of answers to the question, who is the worst coach in the NBA? And I can't disagree. He's not the worst. He's putrid, but he's not the worst. There are some other dick noses out there that are making some poor decisions. Baby Neck had 9 and 10. Leave him for the deeper ones. Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
17-3-6 for Gaz. On to the Thunder. This is... Go and have a look at the Thunder box score when you get the chance. If you're not watching the video here, this is just disgusting. 38-9-6 for Russell Westbrook. I suppose it's fair enough. He has no help, so he has to do everything. 1-3, 3 steals and a block. The free throws, again, just another negative issue. At least he shot 57% from the field, but he took 28 shots. The next highest was Paulie George on 13, and then no one else above 7. Paul George was putrid. Mello, just disgusting. 4-6 in 31 minutes. This is just an absolute disaster of a team at the moment. They got the victory, sure, but it is not good at all. There was no Steve Adams, so Dakari Johnson started, but the bulk of the minutes went to Pat Patterson and Jeremy Grant. They didn't do a huge amount. There is no beneficiary from the Adams injury that's going to even make a sniff into 12-team leagues or even 14-team leagues. It is just an absolute disaster. Andre Robertson, weirdly, has seen his minutes reduce the last couple of games. Only 25 here, 8-4. He's only a defensive specialist. And if he's not getting 30 minutes a night, I can't see how you could even dabble with him in standard leagues. The Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks. The Suns' center rotation, RIP.
Oh, no!
Yep. Alex Lynn played again. Greg Monroe, that's 2 DMP CDs in a row for Greggy.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
I get the feeling. Look, Lynn should just be starting every game. It's pretty straightforward. Let the young guy out there, see what you can do. They have mismanaged and abused this guy for that long. And I know some people don't think he's a good player. I do. I think they have absolutely killed him from going back to Earl Watson with one of the dickest moves of all time. Let's see how Alex Lynn goes at power forward next to Tyson Chandler when he's in his third year. Let's really screw up his development by playing him out of position and then wonder why his block rate went down and his efficiency dropped, because he wasn't near the rim. They've dicked him around continuously, but now he looks solid. 14-4, 4 assists. I would add him in all 12 team leagues. Now, you could get Dicked, and you could get Munro in the next game. You could also get Chandler, because he's a back-to-back, the Suns' next game. So you could get Chandler sitting in one of those, and I think Munro starts one and then doesn't play the other. There's no way of knowing what the hell Jay Triano is doing at any time. Isaiah Cannon signed on an injury exception, 27 minutes. Now, he played well, fair enough. 17-4-6 with 3 steals and 2 triples. That's nice. We know what Isaiah Cannon is at this point, though. He's not going to be able to keep these numbers up going long-term. And much like Torrey Craig, if he's going to remain around after Christmas, in a much shorter time frame from Cannon, someone needs to be waived or there needs to be a 2-for-1 trade pulled off, because he was signed for that exception. And when Booker returns, then he's toast. And recently converted two-way contract, Mike James was a DNP CD last game and played just 9 minutes here, while Tyler Ulis only played 23 minutes. So working at the Suns' point guards, who knows? I've got no idea. It's just a complete shit show at all times there. You know, Cannon, grab him in 14s or 16 team leagues for the short term. Ulis and James, mate, 20 teams for JMO. While Tyler is more of a 14 team league sort of a player. Troy Daniels copped an elbow to the head, but he returned. He did his standard thing where he hit 3 triples and 12 points in 19 minutes. And Marquise Chris, is he the worst starter in the NBA? I'm sure there's another one out there, but he is just bad. I know it's his second season. I know players can turn it around, but I'm not in at all. As you're well aware, 2-4 in 18 minutes and 4 fouls, so that was good of him to at least get another high stat number there. Well, Dragan Bender, 29 minutes, 6-2. At this point, we just got to hope that Triano plays Bender 28 minutes per night, but of course he won't. Bender's not a 12-team league guy, and Chris, not even close to being anywhere near that. On to the Mavericks, the pencil Harrison Barnes, 26-2-3, another strong game from him. Well, Maxi Kleber was solid too, 30 minutes for Maxi, 6-8-4, 2 steals and a block. Really, really like him for 16-teamers, and I reckon you might be able to sneak him into a 14-teamer, but that's probably about it. Yogi Ferrell played 43 minutes with Den Smith out, horrendous from the field, but 13-6-5 means he has that short-term value until at least Smith returns, while Barea, a brilliant assist stream guy, 6 assists here, just keeps racking them up. Even when Smith returns, he can have value in that category. Also, with Seth Curry, if you are still holding him, don't worry about it. I don't think you can do it anymore, to be honest. It's just too much uncertainty. I don't even know what to say about this next game. The Clippers and the Spurs. There was no Wes Johnson. There was no Lou Williams. There was no Blakey Griffin. There was no Rooster. And we didn't have the return of Austin Rivers. But who knows what to make of this rotation. This is a starting lineup in the NBA. Milos Teodosic, Austin Rivers, CJ Williams, Jamil Wilson, 2 two-way guys, and DeAndre Jordan. You've got Juwan Evans playing 29 minutes. Sindarius Thornwell played 16 minutes. Sammy Decker played 19 minutes. The table Montrezl Harrell played 15 minutes. And none of it makes any sense as we move forward. Like, is Johnson going to be out more than a game? When's Lou Williams coming back? When's the Rooster coming back? It just throws all of this off. There's no real move here. You can add Sammy Decker in deeper leagues, so I think he might be able to stick in a rotation spot ahead of Wes Johnson, who'd been struggling before this injury. Milos Teodosic needs to be owned. Austin Rivers, who was disgusting with his shooting, but he needs to be owned as well. Juwan Evans, who I really like for Dynasty, I don't really see much from him this season when everyone gets back healthy. It's just an absolute shit show on this team. On to the Spurs. I reckon we're going to get more shit shows coming up for the Spurs, to be honest. Kawhi played only the first half, only 16 minutes. I think it's going to be a while before we're back at full tilt for him. Tone Parker's still not really ready to go, and the Spurs' next game is a back-to-back set. So you know what that means. Is it one of those games? Kawhi's not going to play, Tone Parker's not going to play, Manu's probably not going to play, and Pau Gasol's probably not going to play. And the way that Popovich has been running things is in that first game, you know, Gasol comes out at halftime, Pat Mills comes out at halftime, LaMarcus sees his minutes reduced, Dan Green is reduced, everyone has their minutes reduced. So maybe on that Wednesday, Thursday back-to-back, you load up on Bryn Forbes, you get Davis Bertans in there, you get DeJounte Murray, especially for that Thursday, because that is the way that I'd be looking at it at the moment. Dan Green was out of this one, so Bryn Forbes started, but Pat Mills played a lot at the two, meaning that DeJounte Murray assumed the backup point guard role. Now, I don't think that'll be a thing that happens all the time, because Forbes isn't going to start and Green's going to be back in that shooting guard mix, so Mills moves across to point guard, but it is something to pay some level of attention to. Davis Bertans, another guy that if he's getting 20 minutes a night, then he is a 2-3-pointer per game sort of a player, so a guy that can have some of that streaming value. Well, Tone Parker, how's this for vintage? 16 points, 7 assists and 2 steals. Do not get overly excited about that. The last game of the night, the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Lakers. The Warriors made a change to their starting lineup, moving Omri Caspi back to the bench and putting JaVale McGee in, and Pat McCaw started in place of Shawnee Livingston. McCaw played 23 minutes and had 2 5-4. I'm not rushing to get him in 12s or 14s. I thought he might have some value with Steph out, but hasn't been the case. Whereas Caspi off the bench did what he did in the starting lineup, 14-10. And as long as Draymond and Zaza are out, I think that Caspi does have some, at least 14 team league value, maybe 12. I could say the same for Jordy Bell, who played 24 minutes and only had 6 points, but 2 assists and 4 blocks makes him that guy, at least until those players return. Durant was great, 36-11-8 with 3 blocks, while Klay Thompson, the rare double-double, 17-10 for Klay, but horrible shooting, which is not something you expect from him. It was Kobe night for the Lakers. They pushed it to overtime, couldn't get the victory. Brook Lopez sprained his ankle. X-rays are negative, but he will be having an MRI, and I would imagine he's going to miss some time. He was really on the borderline of 12-team leagues anyway, and if they say he's out for 2 weeks, I reckon you move on from him. The future MVP started in his place, Kyle Kuzma, 25-6 in 40 minutes. Not much else, but of course, he is a must-own. Julius Randle gets a bump, 15-11 in 31 minutes, but those guys should have already been owned. While Laz Nance, only 21 minutes for him, 8-4, but I think he could push to 26 or 27. Now, in Lopez's absence, there's a number of things that the Lakers can do. Do we just see more minutes for Kuzma, Randle, and Nance? Do you see Brandon Ingram push up and play more at the 4, enabling Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to move to the 3 to get more Josh Hart minutes? Does Andrew Bogut come back? Does Corey Brewer get into the mix? Does Thomas Bryant, who's been killing it for, I think they're called the South Bay Lakers now, he's been killing it for them, does he come back and play and make his NBA debut? Does Ivica Zubats come in and play and take some of Brookie Lopez's minutes? There are a few options that Walton can go to, or he can go to multiple of those, making it really hard to get any value. But Kuzma, Randle, they're the guys you want to own. Nance is a guy you potentially want to go and grab in a 12-teamer. Brandon Ingram, 19-6-5 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, but some poor free throw shooting brought his value down. While Kentavious Caldwell-Pope loves it in California, 14-8 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. And don't look now, but Lonzo Ball's hitting shots. 16-6-6, 2 blocks, 3 triples, 50% shooting, 50% from 3. He's hitting over 40% over his last month. He's fine, and he's going to be a fantasy... I think that I'll make this pronouncement now, that next season, Lonzo Ball will be a top 40 fantasy player. Now, you can isolate this clip, you can keep it, and you can rub it in my face next year, but I think that Lonzo will be a top 40 guy next year, and I'm not the massivest Lonzo fan. But the fact that he's putting up numbers like he is and not playing all that well means that if he can actually get decent rather than below average, then he's easily going to be able to put up those numbers, those top 40 type fantasy numbers. That's what he can do. Jordan Clarkson felt like he was in a bubble all season, just this insane usage and efficiency that felt like it was never going to sustain, and it burst. 7 shots in 19 minutes, 29% true shooting. Now, I'm not saying to go and drop him, but everything felt really unsustainable about what Clarko was doing to begin the season, and it turns out it was unsustainable. Let's see how long it remains in this shitful little form. Something weird has also happened here. As we had the storm, I get the feeling, because I can see my little camera that I used to use here, it's lit back up. So I think the storm has actually shocked my camera back into working. So while I take a break and get ready for the DFS portion, I'm going to play around with my camera, and hopefully I can get it to work, and then you might be able to see me back in all my HD glory without this red tomato beetroot head that I'm sporting at the moment. Now, I do have a new band who sent in some songs that we're going to play in this break before we transition to DFS. The band is called Con Etiquette, and he sent me through a couple of songs, and the song that I'm going to play, which one am I going to do? Let's do this song by Con Etiquette, and the song is called Almost Persuaded. I'm going to fiddle around with this camera, try and get it fixed, and then we'll be back to talk DFS. Almost Persuaded by Con Etiquette. We are back now. If you are watching the video, you can see a blank screen there. I'm trying to fix this camera. Let's see if we can get... Oh, what the hell? It works. You are witnessing this camera being shocked back to life like some sort of movie of someone getting... like a zombie being reanimated through a lightning strike. That is exactly what has happened to my old trusty camera. The new one's coming tomorrow, but I am back in full HD glory. Absolutely amazing stuff. This is a moment for the ages. Let's talk DFS now that I feel all less red and less embarrassed about how fat and disgusting and sunburnt my head looks. Now you can see, I'm actually not that sunburnt, as you can see on this camera. Sorry, I'll stop going on about it. Let's talk perfect DFS lineups for Monday. On FanDuel, Russ Westbrook, 66.8. The Cannonball, Isaiah Cannon, 37.8. Vic Oladipo, 57.5. Kent Bazemore, 50.5. Joshie Richardson, 47.3. Formerly, 44.9. Frank the Tank at 38. The Montenegrin Alpha at 44.6 and Clint Capella at 56.5 for a total of 443.9, and that cost $59,100 on DraftKings. Westbrook 65.25, Cannon 37, Bazemore 44.75, Kaminsky 38.75, Capella 58, Joshie Rich at 45, the Montenegrin Alpha Nick Mirotic at 47.25, and Jimmy Butler at 57.5 for a total of 393.5 points, and that cost $49,000. $700. All right. Three games on Tuesday, and it is what I would refer to as a shitful slate. So let's get into it and have a look at how it all pans out. The first game is the New Orleans Pelicans and the Washington Wizards. We don't know the status of Otto Porter. He is dealing with that right thigh bruise or hip problem, which he's had before. He missed the last game, and Kelly Oubre would likely get another start, and he would be worth a GPP look if Porter happens to not be ready to go. You can also have a look, of course, at Mike Scott, who has been blowing up recently, so he'd be worth a squeeze there as well. At point guard, it's Rajon Rondo, $6,000. He's been not ideal, but still, 28 points in the last game, 28-point average over his last three at $6,000. On this muted slate, is a kind way of putting it, I think he's worth a look. I think he's got a decent enough floor in this matchup with a 35 to 40 point ceiling, which is not a bad play. Johnny Wall at 9,500. I reckon John's got a 50 burger in him here. There are limited options at point guard, especially on this slate. I think he's worth it. He's not the guy that I lock in as the first guy on my roster. But he had 42 in his last game. His last three games against the Pelicans over the last couple of seasons, he's at 56 point average, which is obviously fairly strong. I don't believe that Rondo is really going to be able to slow him down. Jameer Nelson's had one big game in the middle of all these poor ones, but that big game resulted in just 21 points, so it's not like he's worth much of an option. At shooting guard, Bradles Beal has been putting up some nice numbers with John Wallback. 43 in the last game, 8,400, a really strong 34-point minimum over his last five, which is strong as a floor option. I think he's not bad for cash considering the state of this slate. If it was a 10-game slate, I probably wouldn't, but in one like this, I think you could consider Brad and have a decent expectation that he can get to 40 points, I think is probably the best way of happening. I just had Siri ask me if I was summoning her. No, Siri, I wasn't. Don't know if you guys could hear that, but I just had I got my phone in my lap and just heard a female voice emanating from my crotch asking if I summoned her. So I don't even know what to say about that. Etuan Moore, the future or the former best shooter in NBA history, had dropped off a little bit in that last game. The minutes are there for him, though, so he is a strong GPP target. At small forward, Porter's at 6,900. I just don't have any interest in Porter in DFS, to be honest. While Kelly Oubre at 46 didn't do great in the last game with Otto out, but still 23 points is not bad at 4,600. So I think that if Porter's out, I'd be happy getting him in cash, and I'd actually throw him into a GPP even if Otto is in. At power forward, Markieff's at 4,600. You'd have to pay me 4,600, I reckon, to roster him at this point. Well, Mike Scott just on fire, and they've bumped his salary up. Fair enough. 4,500 for Scotty. He had 38 in that last game. His shooting has been at a level which is clearly unsustainable, and you wouldn't want to lock him in cash. I think you'll end in tears. But the ability of him, especially if Porter is out, to play some extra minutes, provide some more offense, and if he gets hot again, bang, it's over, and we're talking about a 30-point performance, and that can be useful. So consider him a GPP guy. At center, Boog. Actually, let's talk about the power forward, because it's Tone Davis, 11,200, bang. Remember he had that 50-20 game against the Wizards a couple of years ago? I feel like 50 is almost minimum here for Tone. I reckon he's in a real good spot. At center, Boog, 11,000. Bang, let's go. Averaging 60 the last three times he's played against his former Kentucky teammate and Johnny Wall. Let's go at him at 11. Really, really like that. I'd take him over Tone Davis, to be honest. While Gortat at 4,300. Surprisingly good record against the Pals. 38 points the last three times, but that is a different Gortat because he's not good anymore and he's not going to get enough minutes, and I am not interested in using him really in the slightest. Let's have a look at DraftKings for this game. Tournaments, it's Oubre again at 4,700, who I would look to use in cash if Porter is out, the same as we do it on FanDuel. Jrue Holiday at 7,100. I think that's super, super strong over on DraftKings. I don't like it as much on FanDuel. I like it on DraftKings a lot. And then you've got Tone Davis at 10,1. Bang. Lock. Boog Cousins, 10,7. Bang. Both of those. Now, I'm not sure that you'd want to put both of them in cash, but it's not like they have a negative correlation, and with so few options on the slate, putting them both together is definitely not a negative move. Johnny Wall's at 88, so less interested there than I am with him on FanDuel. Same with Rondo, who's the same price, and Bradles-Beal at 77. Yeah, I've been putting up some okay numbers, but I could definitely see him being useful on DraftKings. Let's go to the next game. It is the Sacramento Kings and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 8.5, and the total is 207 points here. Joel Embiid will be back after resting on Monday. For the Kings, we have a few guys we don't know. Zebo rested the last game, so he'll be back. Bogdan Bogdanovic copped a knee in the thigh. I imagine that he will play, while De'Aaron Fox missed the last game with a quad contusion. If he is out, I'd expect Justin Jackson rather than Vince Carter. I think that Jaeger was giving Carter the Toronto send-off in the last game, and it's not something that would necessarily stick. At point guard, TJ McConnell had a really, really big game today, 27 points in 31 minutes. He's at 4,600, but with Joel back, I think I'd probably ease off on him and not be too keen. Maybe a tournament, that's about it. Frank Mason III, without De'Aaron Fox, weirdly only played 15 minutes, because why would you bother with logic? 4,200 for Frankie. I think he's absolutely a GPP guy. He'd been playing better than Fox when Fox was healthy, but of course, when Fox goes out, it means he plays less. Work it out. I have to repeat that because it just is as nonsensical as anything. I think he's a GPP type of a guy here. Georgie Hill at 4,700. I reckon he's actually fairly strong in cash. The minutes have been pretty good lately. The performances have been consistently over 25. I think that's not a bad cash play to use Georgie Hill. JJ Redick at 5,600. He's normally a better option when Embiid is out, but I think that, again, on this limited slate, he's not a bad cash guy. While Budrick Hield at 49, you would not want to touch that in cash. Bogdan, if he plays, 4,700. I am in on that. 30 minutes in the previous three games with a 24-point average. I think he's got that 35 to 40-point upside and probably a 25-point floor, to be honest. So I think he's a strong cash and a decent tournament type of a player. At small forward, Bob Cubs at 7,400. He had 32 today. I think that he's got a 35-pointer here, almost a 35-point floor. I do think he's more of a GPP guy than I do as a cash player. At power forward, Benny Simmons, 9,900. Bang, 55 for him today. Let's go with Ben. Really think that's good in cash. While Šarić at 6,600, I'd probably fade that. After a big game today, people might chase. And with Embiid back, he's likely to suffer somewhat of a dip in his performances. Zebo's at 7,000. Zebo's numbers have come down a little bit since everyone's been healthy. I don't know what sort of front court configuration they're going to run. Will it be Cauley-Stein and Kufos? Will it be Zebo and Labissiere back together? Will it be Zebo and Cauley-Stein? Who knows what Jaeger's going to run? 7,000 is too expensive. And legit, 3,500 is twice as much as I'd be willing to play for Scala Labissiere. At center, the process, Joel Embiid, 11,500, a massive opportunity against a Kings team who has just been beautiful for opposition centers to play against. We know how good Embiid is. I think that price is a little bit risky, though. You can take Boog and you can take Tone Davis for the same, if not less, in terms of salary, and I'd probably rather them, but this is as good a matchup as you get for Embiid, so absolutely he should be in your GPPs. For Rishon Holmes at 3,900, with Trevor Booker silent, I reckon he's not a bad option here. Yes, there'll be limited minutes behind Embiid at center, but he could get some power forward minutes, get 20 minutes, and easily exceed 22 points here, so I think he's not a bad cash play. Will Cauley-Stein at 6,000, I think he's strong for cash, limited tournament upside, but a 30-pointer shouldn't be considered too much of a stretch for Will Cauley-Stein. On DraftKings, Hield at 4,600 is a tournament play, and that's about it. But there's a bunch of cash guys I like here. The process at 9,900 is fantastic. I love that for him here. That's cheaper than Tone Davis. That's cheaper than Book Cousins. We're talking about a guy who legit has got 90-point upside against a great opposition. This is bangable. Like, that's one for James Brown and damplips.com. That is that nice for Joel Embiid here. Bob Cove's at 6,200. I really, really like that for cash. I'm big onto that. While Cauley Stein at 5,200 is as cashy as it gets. Šarić at 61 is more appealing on DraftKings than FanDuel. Benny Simmons at 95 is good, but I would rather spend the 400 and take Embiid. Whereas on FanDuel, I probably flip them and I take Benny there. While Georgie Hill at 46 feels like a... And it's weird to say it about the Kings, but it feels like a safe cash play at 4,600 for George Hill. But the bed shitting could be just around the corner. Let's go on to the last game of the night, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Cavs are favored by 1.5, and the total is 217. We don't know for the Bucks whether Dally will play, whether Snally will play, whether Jason Terry will play. So three shooting guards. So do we see the Bucks debut of sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick? Maybe, but I don't think it's really going to matter all that much. You're going to have DeAndre Liggins, Rashad Vaughn, Sterling Brown all there to mop up those minutes. And Brogdon, will he get 40? Will he get 25? Only Jason Kidd knows. And to be honest, he doesn't know either. He just literally just, go in. Doesn't actually know what he's doing half the time. And I'm only 10% joking on that. At point guard, Eric Bledsoe, 7,100. Had an absolutely brilliant record against Cleveland. 51-point average the last three times. Cleveland backcourt susceptible to big performances. 7,100 for him. I am locked in on that. Jose Calder on the other point guard on the other side. 4,200 for Jose. Probably not really worth discussing too much. At shooting guard, Brogo's at 4,900. As I said, we get 40-minute Brogdon. That's great. We get 26-minute Brogdon. It's something. So that makes him a GPP sort of an option. Junior Smith, the plumber, 4,200 for Junior. Maybe for a tournament, but yeah, not really that keen. Chrissy Middleton's at 78. That's probably just a little bit too high for Chris. I do like him, but you're hoping for 40 there at that price, and I just think he's more of a 34 sort of guy. And that's just really not going to get it cut. Well, that's not the right phrase. He's not going to cut it at that sort of price. Tone Snell, no way. At small forward, Giannis Antetokounmpo, 12,300, very, very expensive. I think it's only for GPPs just because you have to put those other cheap guys in, and are there enough of them around to do that? Yeah, I would much rather go your Tone Davis's, your Book Cousins, your Benny Simmons's, even at that 10,000 mark, rather than 12,300 on Yanni. And then you got on the other side,
LeBron James.
He's at 12,000, so a very similar thing for LeBron. You know, you need him to get 60, which I think is probably a little bit of a hard ask. I think 50 is a realistic expectation, but I can get 50, 55 from Boog or from Tone, and that's a little bit more valuable given how much you have to pay less for both those guys. So I think that both Giannis and LeBron are both tournament guys, but I think they're both in a multiple tournament situation. I think having both of them in and then going with cheap options around them, because they could go back and forward, the game's close, they could, you know, go back and forward with each other, you know, put big lines up each, both go for 70, or that could happen, and then put some other cheap guys around them. That could be a workable lineup for a tournament. At power forward, the Muppet, John Henson, 5,500, has struggled a little bit of late, but I don't think he's a bad option, but it's mainly slate-related. Jay Crowder, Jeff Green, no. Centers, Kevin Love, 8,000. This is a good spot for Lovey. 46 average the last three times against the Bucks. 40 is not an unrealistic expectation. I do like him quite a bit here. Thon McCurr, Tristan Thompson, Channing Frye, not really interested in either of those guys. On DraftKings, a bunch of guys I like for cash. Now, LeBron at 11.6 and Yanni at 11.4, much stronger cash options on DraftKings than they are on FanDuel. Kevin Love at 78, Bledsoe at 67, and the Muppet, John Henson at 45, all have significant cash and tournament value over on DraftKings. Let's just wrap this up over on the other sites. On Yahoo, for tournaments, Tone Davis, Bob Cuff, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Kelly Oubre, the plumber. And then for cash, it's Georgie Hill, Etuan Moore, Brogo, the Muppet, Will Cauley-Stein, Šarić, Bledsoe, Middleton, Love, Yanni, and Embiid. And on Moneyball, for tournaments, Embiid, Antetokounmpo, Boog, Love, Bob Cuff, Brogo, Dwayne O'Wade, the plumber. And for cash, it's Cauley Stein, Rondo, Holiday, Bledsoe, Middleton, Simmons, Tone Davis, and LeBron James. And wrapping it up with draft stars for tournaments, Yanni, LeBron, Boogie, Ben Simmons, Bob Cove, Brogo, Budrick, the Plumber, Kelly Oubre, Frank Mason III. And for cash, we've got the Muppet. We've got Cauley Stein, Redick, Šarić, Drew Holiday, Eric Bledsoe, Johnny Wall, Tone Davis, and Joel Embiid. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me as the lead fantasy analyst over at basketballmonster.com, and you can find everything related to the podcast on lockedonfantasybasketball.com. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bebel, and of course the Basketball Monster Twitter account, which is at baskmonster. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and give me a 5-star review and tell me I look great in red. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Mark Gasol.